that are going on or negotiations that are underway in Vienna as well. Can it be that the Iraqi events are also tied from an American point of view? They are tied to the Iranian deal as it is being propagated by the Western mainstream media that propagates everything that goes on in the White House.
I personally don't think that. It's true that Iran has evolved to a regional power, but it's far-fetched to attach everything in the region to the Iranian nuclear fire. They say this every time there's an issue in the region, regardless of it, if it's about Lebanon, Yemen, or Iraq. But it's far from true. Unlike USA, Iran have allies which are connected to it ideologically, but they are very independent. Thus, they are acting with this independence, and that's why the Iraqi file is not connected at all to the nuclear file, the Iranian nuclear file. Mm-hmm. And the United States will sooner or later realize that they need to listen to the Iraqi people, and there's only one solution to the Iraqi file. Leave Iraq and period.
Well, there's one more file that the U.S. has not used, or maybe option that the U.S. has not used against the Iraqi people, which it had used against Yemen, against Syria, and against Lebanon, and that's sanctions. Do you think that might be one of the options on the table, and how do you think that would affect the internal economy and social fabric of Iraq?
Of course, that could be something that the United States will use as a B card, as a plan B. And if they use it, it will be a very it will be a disaster to the Iraqi economy and to the Iraqi nation, because Iraq has already problems with the economy, and the oil is not at that price that they used to have it before. So it could be the situation could become like it's in Syria if they imply the sanctions.
So do you think that is actually one of the options that would maybe bend the arms of the Iraqi government?
Definitely, because when the United States of America are not able to reach its goals with military way, they go to the sanctions.
They go to the sanctions, and that basically is what the Iraqi government maybe is afraid of, but at the same time it shows that it is working against the maybe benefit and the demands of the Iraqi resistance. And that was the fear mainly when I ask a lot of my Iraqi friends about it internally. They say that they fear for the future of the Iraqi resistance. Do they have anything to really be afraid of?
I don't think that they need to be afraid of that, because before Ghazmi came to power, the Iraqi Prime Minister and government of Mr. Abdel Mahdi, they traveled to China and they made an agreement with China to sell approximately 100,000 barrels of oil a day for Chinese investment in Iraq. And now Ghazmi is giving about 200,000 barrels of oil in a day in the new deal he made with Jordan and Egypt. So Iraq, as with the case of Iran, they have a window to the east, to China, so they don't need to be afraid of the U.S. sanctions.
Mm-hmm. But yet the Iraqi government seems to be more than willing to abide by the demands of the Biden administration in fear that it might fall under certain sanctions or even more pressure. We still don't know what kind of pressure that the U.S. will be using against whether the Khatami administration or government in Iraq, or the targets that it might hit the Iraqi resistance. But the Iraqi resistance has shown so far that it is not silent. It has a loud voice. It will target any occupying force all across Iraq until their land is liberated. I want to thank you very much, Firas Ali, for being with us from Malmo to talk about how the U.S. is being targeted inside of Iraq and what options do both sides have. Thank you for being with us. And please stay tuned, because next week we have more news right here on the Mideast Stream.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Forty recommendations by Imam Khamenei for the journey towards God.
Internal obstacles. The path ahead is clear for us, and the obstacles are also clear for the Iranian nation. You must overcome these obstacles, both the internal obstacles and the external ones. The internal obstacles can be overcome by supplication to God, prayer, attention to God, self edification and reinforcing morals. If our hearts are not purified, we will not be able to build a correct world. If we are defective inside, we cannot fix a defective society and a defective world. The Iranian nation has a great responsibility that has to be fulfilled. They have to build a wonderful world both for themselves and for other societies. You can do it. But only if each and every one of us works on self-edification. Praying attentively, reciting Quran, prayer and supplication, fasting in Ramadan, and not prayers, especially for the youth who are more receptive, can be self-edifying.
رمضان يا شهر القرآن فيك أذوق حلاوة الإيمان لا لا تنقضي أنت للروح دواء رمضان 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 يا حبيب رمضان ليتك دوما قريب
One hour in seclusion. Pray. Stand up the night in prayers. Contemplate. Be attentive by dhikr. Spend an hour between yourself and God. Put different occupations aside and get closer to God, God's friend, and Imam al-Mahdi, God hasten his reappearance. Get closer to Quran and reflect on it. Mosque as a base. Establish brotherly ties with the Imam of your mosque, the worshippers at the mosque, and the believers who visit the mosque, and safeguard and fortify those ties. Stand up in prayer at the earliest time, in congregation, in any mosque you find yourself in. Attend religious gatherings at mosques. Attend Quran and dua recitation sessions. Make mosques more attractive.
Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah. All praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
around the world with reporters.
No one eats or drinks anything during the day. Restaurants and bakeries are all closed. This is not neither because of threats or the COVID-19 pandemic. What has created such an atmosphere across Afghanistan comes from a religious belief that prohibits Muslims from drinking and eating under the name of fasting. Ramadan is the name for one of the holiest Islamic months and is the ninth month in the Islamic lunar calendar. The rising of the sun marks the beginning of fasting and Muslims are allowed to break it after sunset. Now let's see how Afghans break their fasts when the sun sets. The approval for every Muslim to break their fast is Azan-e-Maghrib, or the call for the sunset prayer. That is why almost all Muslims first do their sunset prayers before breaking their fast, which is called iftar. However, iftar time is a specific time for Afghans, as they traditionally and religiously get together at their homes or at restaurants. The gatherings are called iftari. There are special dishes and drinks in the Afghan food culture for iftari.
Iftar time is very important to our people. We prepare some special dishes and drinks for iftar, such as duk, tea, fresh juices, and some local dishes, including bolani, sambasa, ashak, manto, qabeli, and kebab.
Many here also see the fasting month of Ramadan as a time for boosting their family relations and social ties by inviting others for iftari.
We have many traditions and customs to mark the holy month of Ramadan. For instance, most of us use Ramadan as an opportunity to invite others for iftari. This is based on our religious and traditional beliefs that, of course, strengthen our social ties.
In the meantime, there are also poor people who are in urgent need of food and shelter during the holy month of Ramadan. Our religion teachings urge Muslims to support them as part of duties of a fasting Muslim. Therefore, some individuals and charity groups set up food distribution programs for poor families during the holy month. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
COVID-1 vaccine was proved safe during the first phase of the human trials. And now the second stage suggests it also provides effective immunity against the coronavirus. Produced by the headquarters for the execution of Imam Khomeini's order, COVID-1 was injected to 280 volunteers in the second clinical stage. And the results were reported to the health ministry.
We passed the first and second clinical stages, and in the next 2 days, we will report the results of the second phase to the regulatory bodies. So far, we have achieved promising results as to the efficiency of the vaccine. Once this phase is complete, we can then speak with certainty about the exact percentage of the vaccine's efficiency.
Once the second phase is over and the vaccine is proved effective against the coronavirus, the third and final stage will then be initiated, which involves giving the jabs to 20,000 volunteers. COVID-1 authorities say they have already issued the call for voluntary injections since time is running short.
Based on international standards, if a vaccine gives at least 50% immunity against the virus, it is viable and can be mass-produced. We are confident from our lab tests that Coviran is effective and can generate significant number of antibodies, so we have already issued a call for volunteers to study its efficacy on a larger statistical population.
The first phase of the clinical trial was carried out in December last year, which proved that the vaccine is safe and will not cause any side effects. Other than Coviran, Iran is working on 7 other homegrown vaccines, including Covpars, which is now undergoing the first phase of the human trials. This as the country has already started vaccination of the most vulnerable groups, mainly using Russia's Sputnik V.
Coviran is already ahead in the race compared to other Iranian local vaccines. Now as the fourth wave of the pandemic is sweeping the country, Coviran developers say they're making their utmost efforts to get their jabs to the market within the next 2 months. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Signatories of the Iran nuclear deal end their fifth session in 2 weeks amid efforts to revive the agreement known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA. Two working groups have been formed, one to draft a list of measures that need to be taken by Iran, and another to outline the sanctions that have to be removed by the US. Now, a third expert group will be working on the matter of sequence. Iran's lead delegate, Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi, said that would be the focus of talks when they resume next week.
Next week, the important question is to talk about the sequence, because we have already talked about measures, and we have now focused more on the question of sequence to make sure that the U.S., who has left the JCPOA, should come back first, should lift all its sanctions first, and then Iran would follow after the verification.
Although no direct talks have taken place between Iran and the U.S., the American delegation has been engaged in discussions with the other parties, including Britain, France, Germany, Russia, and China.
The top priority remains to focus on sanction lifting. In this particular context, the U.S. must lift all its sanctions, may it concern Iran or any third party, in thorough, complete, and straightforward manner.
Before leaving Vienna for Tehran, Araghchi said Iran does not want to prolong the negotiations, but also needs to take the time to work on every single word that's being drafted to come up with a specific formula allowing both Iran and the U.S. to come back to full compliance. Iran says the talks are on the right track and moving forward, but as the EU coordinator put it, there's still a lot of work to be done. Homolinsky, Vienna.
Tensions between the United States and Russia appear to be ratcheting up in recent weeks over a range of issues, including Ukraine. The Russian Defense Ministry on Tuesday accused the U.S. and NATO of engaging in what it described as provocative activities in the waters and airspace of the Black Sea. Moscow also accused Kiev of trying to destabilize the situation in the eastern Donbass region. Amid escalating tensions, Washington and its NATO allies have rallied behind Kiev. They voiced concern over Russia's troop deployment along its borders with Ukraine, claiming Russia might be planning to invade the country. But Moscow said the military buildup was in response to cold, threatening military action by NATO and nothing more. Washington-Moscow tensions heightened after the U.S. administration announced a new array of anti-Russia sanctions last Thursday. The White House claimed the sanctions were in retaliation for a range of Russia's actions, including its alleged meddling in the U.S. election, cyber espionage, and action in Ukraine. The Kremlin responded with tit-for-tat measures. But the hostile attitude of the U.S. and its allies is not limited to Russia. They have also collectively formed and launched a pressure campaign against China. Just last month, the U.S., along with the European Union, Britain, and Canada, imposed coordinated actions on Beijing under the pretext of human rights violations. The United States and China have also been embroiled in disputes over a host of issues ranging from trade, Hong Kong, and Taiwan. Beijing has time and again accused Washington of seeking to destabilize mainland China by interfering in the affairs of Hong Kong and Chinese Taipei, as well as fomenting tensions in the South China Sea. The country last week escalated its military activities after the U.S. announced it would deploy its warships to the region. The Chinese president on Tuesday also criticized the hegemonic power structures in the global governance, calling for the rejection of such moves.
The future of the world should be mastered by all countries in the world. Rules made by a single country or just a few countries cannot be forcibly applied on others. The world order cannot be led by unilateralism from some country.
The growing tension between Washington on the one side and Moscow and Beijing on the other is bringing the two countries even closer. U.S. President Joe Biden will probably face a nightmare scenario given deepening ties and strategic cooperation between China and Russia, the countries Washington think is a threat to its global interests.
Northern Ireland is bracing itself for more potential trouble. Peaceful pop-up protests across the region in the coming days. An opportunity, some say, to catch police by surprise and block major roads for a time. They follow days of riots and violent clashes earlier this month that plunged the city of Belfast and parts of Northern Ireland into a crisis not seen since the dark days of the Troubles that started in the late 1960s and led to nearly three decades of bloodshed.
There will be protests around the north of Ireland, but what's worrying is that there's a lot of disinformation also. What we're seeing here is a hidden hand and trying to raise tensions between the Catholic and Protestant communities. And when we see this, these things happening, we always have to remember that when there's a void, there, extremists fill that void. And when the extremists are there to fill that void, we always see the hidden hand of British security services.
Tensions have been rising since Brexit, which many warned would threaten the Good Friday Agreement of 1998 that put an end to the Troubles. The implementation of the Northern Ireland Protocol allowed the UK to leave the EU without setting up a border on the island of Ireland. Instead, the UK and EU agreed to a customs border between Britain and Northern Ireland. Now, the loyalist and unionist communities who wish to remain under British rule are demanding the protocol be scrapped.
This would seriously destabilize the peace and brought us back to somewhere that was pre-1998 and something that we as a society didn't want to see.
The riots were also fueled by the country's police chief's refusal to resign after a decision not to prosecute Sinn Féin politicians for attending a large funeral last year against COVID restrictions.
I don't see why Simon Byrne would have resigned. I think that he gave his report to those that would have made that decision within the PPS. And, you know, once he has passed that on, there's not much he can do after that. He made recommendations.
Efforts are underway for a political settlement of tensions, including a call for dialogue among all sides from the U.S. president. Still, fears of more unrest and violence are in the air. Saeed Bouriza, London.
The EU's top diplomat, Josep Borrell, updated the bloc's 27 foreign affairs ministers on the latest state of play regarding talks in Vienna to try and save the Iran nuclear deal. He told them that discussions have become less general and more focused, particularly regarding US sanctions against Iran and the Islamic Republic's nuclear energy program.
I talked with Secretary of State Blinken last week when he was in Brussels. I also talked with Minister Sharif. I think that both parts are really interested in reaching an agreement.
Borrell talks about an agreement, but critics say the EU has been much too soft on the US. After all, an agreement was reached in 2015. It was endorsed by the UN. Only the US broke the terms of the accord when Donald Trump took Washington out of the deal almost 3 years ago.
With Iran, we'll see what happens.
Analysts say in those 3 years, the EU, as coordinator of the deal, officially called the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, failed to stand up to Trump. Representatives from Iran, Russia, China, France, Britain, Germany, and the European Commission are attempting to preserve the accord during negotiations in the Austrian capital. US officials are there on the sidelines of the talks. Given that the nuclear deal is underpinned by UN Resolution 2231, the vast majority of diplomats agree it should be respected.
We are 193 member states of the United Nations. Of course, the United States, as you rightly pointed out, is a powerful member state, but they are a member state. And so we need to rally the numbers against those that may have different opinions.
Some citizens we've been talking to say Tel Aviv is behind efforts to derail the nuclear agreement.
Israel have interests and Israel are kind of pushing America.
Frankly, what we need is more peace and not more warmongering.
Tehran insists the only way the issue can be resolved is if Washington lifts all of its illegal sanctions. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Imposed more tight restrictions to fight the spread of the coronavirus. Earlier, Turkish president said that the daily lockdown during the first 2 weeks of the holy month of Ramadan will start at 7 p.m. instead of 9 p.m. The lockdown will last till 5 a.m. every day, as the weekend lockdown will continue with stricter measures and more police officers present in the streets to make sure citizens and residents are abiding by the rules. During the weekend, security forces in all 81 provinces were out to make sure people are not violating the lockdown. Tourists are the only ones allowed to be outside during the lockdowns. In Istanbul alone, some 20,000 policemen took part in this campaign. Turkish Interior Minister threatened to punish those who do not respect the rules.
We will be out with our full force. Foreigners with residency permits are also subjected to restrictions and lockdowns, and they have to obey the rules just like others. I have the authority to revoke the residency permits of those who try to exploit the situation, pretending to be tourists. We will not let this happen.
The death toll in Turkey surged last month when restrictions were relaxed. Some blame the people who didn't act responsibly. Others blame the government for taking decisions based on the economic needs of the country rather than what is better for people's health. Analysts believe the government must take stricter measures. However, it is the economic situation that is preventing it from doing so.
Government is doing its best against the pandemic, but unfortunately the cases are rising because the country cannot afford full closure of businesses. Therefore, semi-closure is the only solution, and people must be more responsible.
Turkish Health Ministry said 20 million vaccine jabs have been distributed across the country. This is as Turkey says it has potentially developed a vaccine that just entered the phase of human trials. Turkish Industry and Technology Minister Mustafa Varank has volunteered for the trials. Turkish government wants to welcome tourists again after the holy month of Ramadan. However, many believe it is still too soon for this step, as only 25% of citizens have been vaccinated. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
After mass scenes of a failed security operation against thousands of protesters demanding the expulsion of French ambassador from Pakistan, the public resentment pitched high when the police launched operation against the protesters in the eastern city of Lahore. At the heart of public outrage is the revoking of a 6-month-old agreement by the government with Tehreek-e-Labbaik Pakistan, or the TLP, a political and religious group. The TLP championed the cause to expel French ambassador over a repeated incident of blaspheming of Muslim Prophet Muhammad and their official patronage by the French government. The TLP supporters allegedly attacked a police station in Lahore and kidnapped 11 policemen, including a senior official. Later on, the protesters released all the police officials. The police says an oil tanker with over 50,000 liters of fuel was also taken away by the protesters, which caused ripples within the corridors of power of its possible explosion. A strong public reaction once again forced the government to halt its security operation. There were countrywide wheel jam strike and closure of businesses after many opposition parties and other religious groups announced to support the TLP's demand to expel French ambassador.
How long we would put up with incidents like burning of Holy Quran? How long we would put up with blasphemy being committed against our Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him? But now we have decided not to tolerate it any longer.
Alarmed by public backlash, Prime Minister Imran Khan struggled hard in his live address to the nation to calm down public anger.
When Muslim countries stand up together and collectively boycott trade with France over blasphemy incidents, then it would have an impact. I would lead this campaign internationally now to prevent incidents of blasphemy.
Pakistan banned TLP last week, declaring it a terrorist organization in a country where violence against the police has become a norm by almost all major political parties to press their demands.
The government has resumed negotiation with the TLP, which is not ready to settle down on anything short of the expulsion of French ambassador from Pakistan. Now the TLP seems to be on a far more strong footing after a failed security operation against them. Therefore, analysts believe that the government is also running out of options but to withdraw its decision to ban it. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
The the factory in the south of Tehran, where a new vaccine named Osvit would be produced within a few months to immune people against the deadly coronavirus. The name is taken from the pharmaceutical company that is developing the vaccine in collaboration with a knowledge-based firm. The joint project will soon be tested on humans to be mass-produced in the capital, Tehran.
Given that the initial phases of the Osvit 19 are completed and the early stages, including the animal phase, were carried out on rats and monkeys successfully, we need to launch this mass production line, and now we are prepared.
I asked the officials whether the formula is imported from other countries or it is indigenous, and this was the answer.
Not even a single word of the 420-page project of the vaccine has been non-native. It's fully developed in Iran. We took samples from the first patients at the beginning of the pandemic. Then it was characterized, inactivated, and cultivated. The job has been a very complicated teamwork and totally indigenous.
Right now, the company is producing the vials, and as the manager said, they can produce up to 6,000 every hour. They also told us that there is a capacity to produce about 20 million doses of the jab in a year. After the official ceremony in which the vial was unveiled, the vice president for science and technology launched the production line.
Within the past few years, very good things have been achieved in the domain of vaccine production in the country. This year, we have several corona vaccines to be mass-produced. This vial production line is a very important infrastructure for other companies that are developing the vaccine.
The Osvit vaccine must be injected in two stages with a three-week interval.
Iran says the second phase of vaccination against COVID-19 will begin in early May, and at this stage, about 15 million people would be vaccinated against the coronavirus. To this end, the country needs about 30 million doses of the vaccine, out of which a great number will be homemade ones. Fuman Abedi, Tehran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily around the clock for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
in the limelight.
The jury's guilty verdict on the former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin for killing George Floyd signaled the conclusion of a historic police brutality trial, and a key moment for policing and for the battle for racial equality in America. Observers have talked about this case being so significant that it will stand as a watershed between the way law enforcement was held to account in the United States before George Floyd was pinned by the neck under Derek Chauvin's knee, and after. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist Joanna Walters. The piece is titled, "Will the Derek Chauvin Guilty Verdict Change Policing in America?" Stay with us for more of Joanna Walters' article. Jury's guilty verdict on the former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin for killing George Floyd signaled the conclusion of a historic police brutality trial, and a key moment for policing and for the battle for racial equality in America. Observers have talked about this case being so significant that it will stand as a watershed between the way law enforcement was held to account in the United States before George Floyd was pinned by the neck under Derek Chauvin's knee, and after. From the time bystander video of that drawn-out death, as George Floyd, a 46-year-old black man, begged for his life whilst Derek Chauvin, who is white, looked defiantly into the camera, two major things shifted. First, the Black Lives Movement, already battling for an end to disproportionate police killings of black people and for justice and equity, drove a massive new civil rights uprising that spread from Minneapolis across the United States and internationally. It inspired marches and largely peaceful protests coast to coast, from small towns in rural areas to America's biggest cities. And the demonstrations expanded to include other deaths of defenseless black people at the hands of police or racist agitators. People such as Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, Philando Castile, Walter Scott, Eric Garner, Michael Brown, and so many others in the recurring American tragedy. The impetus rippled to other countries, where marches were held in many cities to mark local police killings, as well as those in the United States, and Black Lives Matter became an international rallying cry. And to some extent into US culture more broadly, so that managements were urged to examine or accelerate long overdue efforts to address entrenched white privilege that perpetuates a poisonous lack of diversity in corporations and organizations. But especially in relation to law enforcement in the United States, people started asking how the egregious police killings were going to stop unless policing itself was fundamentally reformed, up to the point of entirely defunding and abolishing police departments and rethinking how cities should administer public safety, public order, and care. Second, vital chunks of the traditional so-called blue wall of silence, where police departments harbor one of their own after wrongdoing and fend off demands for accountability, crumbled. After Madaria Arredondo, the Minneapolis police chief saw the viral bystander video of George Floyd's death, things moved quickly. Arredondo publicly called Floyd's killing a murder. He fired and had arrested Derek Chauvin and the three other police officers who were involved in violently arresting Floyd on suspicion of the misdemeanor of using a fake $20 bill in a Minneapolis corner store. And then he was one of the star witnesses for the prosecution at Derek Chauvin's murder trial, among a string of serving Minneapolis police officers who testified against their former colleague. Medaria Arredondo, the first black police chief in the history of Minneapolis, had previously sued the department for discrimination when he was struggling to rise through the ranks. Arredondo told the jury he vehemently disagreed with Derek Chauvin's actions. The officer had in no way, shape or form followed regulations or training policies and had shown a disregard for police principle to respect the sanctity of life. Even if part of the motivation was to scapegoat Derek Chauvin whilst trying to show how the department had made improvements, it is still rare for a police chief to acknowledge and eject a killer cop, see them prosecuted, and then testify against them. And the police department looked bad anyway, because Derek Chauvin had worked there for 19 years and had had numerous complaints about brutality made against him whilst escaping the consequences. So the level of transparency and accountability demonstrated during the Chauvin case was notable. Despite assertions at the trial's opening that it was about one police officer and one case, it was clear from the start that U.S. policing, and as Floyd's relatives said themselves, America itself was on trial. The United States has a sprawling, decentralized system of policing. The country has roughly 18,000 police departments, each with their own use of force policy, hiring practices, and oversight mechanisms, making universal reform near impossible. And the Trump administration certainly sent limited progress towards reform hurtling backwards. There has been no revolution in racial justice or policing in the United States since George Floyd was killed on 25th of May 2020. A vote in Minneapolis last June to create a process to replace the police department with a new system of public safety and accountability, for example, soon ran into difficulty, and frustration across the country is legion. But there has been progress, and George Floyd's terrible death reverberated so comprehensively around the world that even if there are setbacks or slow marching by conservatives, the direction is definitely forward.
Today. 2015 may have produced the landmark nuclear deal, but 2021 may be the year that sees it resurrected. April in Vienna has been the scene of talks between current parties to the deal and America. That's to say, the P4 plus one parties are trying to help the U.S. back into the nuclear deal, or JCPOA, so that Iran will fully recommit and the deal is reset to how it started out 6 years ago. Oh, but in the midst of talks, Iran's main nuclear power plant came under a terror attack, presumably to weaken Iran's hand at the negotiating table by taking away its leverage. Will the saboteurs be given the satisfaction, or will the world's most prominent nations keep sharp and conclude the Vienna talks with results before any more spanners can be put into the works, and while Iran's present government is still presiding nuclear deal talks? I'm Leila Faramayz. Nobody has directly taken responsibility for the attack on Natanz's nuclear enrichment site, but Israeli media has been filled with claims from unnamed officials claiming responsibility. And Israel, under Benjamin Netanyahu, has vowed not to see the deal revived. There is no room for doubt the saboteur was Israel. Wouldn't be the first time. How did it bust Iran's IR-1 centrifuges at the underground Natanz site? And would it dare go ahead without U.S. backing? Mr. Marandi is professor of international studies, frequenting major international news channels. He says,
without a doubt, the attack was carried out with American knowledge and American support. It's impossible that the Israeli regime would carry out such an attack at such a sensitive time without prior American knowledge. And the American Secretary of Defense was on his way to Tel Aviv when it was carried out. So no serious person would accept that the Israeli regime just carried out this attack on its own.
That is correct in all its madness and contradiction. American aid to the Israeli sabotage is in direct conflict with the nature of the talks. The nuclear deal or JCPOA talks are to convince Iran of American goodwill, of America's intention to lift sanctions off this country so that Iran can re-comply and willingly slow down its civilian nuclear program. Instead, Natanz came under what Iran's nuclear agency branded nuclear terrorism. Mr. Rezvanpour is a political analyst who's been keeping close watch of JCPOA developments. He welcomed us at his home. Iran appears okay with not achieving what's intended from the Vienna talks. But would you say it's possible that all parties equally enter the JCPOA, re-enter?
The ongoing talks, which is being held at Vienna with the representatives of Iran and 4+1 groups, they have just held different kinds of meetings during the past couple of weeks. But the results of the meeting has not been shown to the public up to now. The reason why it has not been concluded is that the West is persisting on its own demand. In international relationships, we have a principle. They say, what is mine, and what is yours is negotiable.
Mr. Mackey is a political analyst with all the details. He visited Press TV studios to share his views. Thing is, parties to the JCPOA don't have any more time to drag their feet along. So, are we going to get results? Are the U.S. and Iran going to resurrect the JCPOA?
The behavior and reaction of the European and American governments show that they have the political will to lift the sanctions and return to their obligations under the JCPOA. But reviving the deal isn't limited to Iran and the United States. There are actors inside Washington, Tehran, and also the region and the whole world that can play negative or positive roles in the process of talks. This has made the talks quite complicated. We can't expect anything extraordinary to happen in the short term.
The contradiction comes in brighter light as we look at Iran's reaction. Rather than getting blackmailed into even indirect talks with the U.S., it just immediately took to further and faster uranium enrichment. It is no longer settling for 20% enrichment, but is set to enrich uranium up to 60% purity. And it will be replacing the old damaged centrifuges with more advanced IR-6 models. That will significantly increase its enrichment capacity. Well, the U.S. just hasn't come to know Iran in 40 years and more. What's troubling is that the Europeans haven't condemned Israel's actions. Why would you say Iran's European partners in the JCPOA didn't condemn Israel's act of sabotage?
Anywhere in the world, they are controlling different kinds of politicians in the US, in Europe. So they didn't condemn Israeli act. And this action overshadowed, the process of negotiations between Iranian representative and 4+1 group. In my opinion, the Western governments must condemn Israel because they committed, as I stated before, they committed a nuclear terrorism in our nuclear facilities.
German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas expressed concern that the attack could affect the talks by saying, "All of what we're hearing from Tehran is not a positive contribution to this. All of what we're hearing from Tehran. Thing is, they might hear something more positive if they heed Iran's natural expectation to have the act of terror on Natanz condemned." The German minister's comments came as U.S. Defense Secretary Austin and U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken prepared to meet their counterparts in Brussels for talks with European and NATO allies, likely to touch on Iran.
Well, we have to keep in mind that Western intelligence agencies, NATO intelligence agencies, and the Israelis, they're all working together. It's not as if it's one against one or two against one. Western embassies are sometimes involved. Even people working in the media are sometimes involved. People working in the International Atomic Energy Agency have been involved.
Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif sent a letter to the UN Security Council asking it to hold Israel accountable. He tweeted, "Deliberate targeting of a safeguarded nuclear facility with high risk of indiscriminate release of radioactive material is nuclear terrorism and a war crime." Iran also delivered a letter to the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, urging it to condemn the attack. The IAEA is the United Nations nuclear watchdog that monitors Iran's nuclear program more than any other.
Iran just asked the Western sides to condemn this kind of Israeli action in its own nuclear facilities, but never Western authorities didn't answer and didn't just stated any response. So it was their fault, in my opinion. Even at the negotiating table, they didn't issue a statement condemning Israeli action regarding this sabotage act in Natanz nuclear facilities. And the Western countries, 4+1 group, should issue a statement condemn Israeli actions because it is our own right under nuclear non-proliferation treaty.
The purpose of the JCPOA, Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or Iran nuclear deal, was to limit Iran's civilian nuclear program by lifting nuclear-related economic UN sanctions off this country. But the U.S. under Donald Trump unilaterally pulled out of the deal in 2018 and reimposed and reinforced UN sanctions as U.S. sanctions. Europeans failed to help Iran in spite of this country's compliance with the deal. So, Iran started reversibly stepping out of its commitments and awaiting respite. Even this, it did in line with the UN Security Council Resolution 2231 and the JCPOA, Articles 26 and 36. Time to give other outlets a chance to get a word in. So let's take leave of our narrative for a bit for a quick media review. And here's the words they put it in. Looking at TRT World, the intentions behind the Natanz terror attack could have backfired to benefit Iran's diplomatic efforts at Vienna. Nuclear terrorism in Natanz threatens diplomacy in Vienna. Given Tel Aviv's record of lobbying the U.S. to take military action against Iran, it is hardly surprising that the Israelis would be keen to remind all in the region and beyond that there are options outside of diplomacy for addressing Iran's nuclear activity. The Israeli Prime Minister wants the world to know that his country will not sit by idly as talks in Vienna progress, with almost all actors in the international community hoping for a successful revival of the JCPOA. In attacking the nuclear facility in Natanz, however, Israel might be undermining its anti-diplomacy agenda. This attack could increase the resolve of diplomats in Europe who are attempting to save the nuclear accord before Iran's upcoming presidential election. The attack will undoubtedly push all parties involved to redouble their efforts in finding a resolution during the ongoing negotiations in Vienna, according to foreign policy analyst Mehran Haghirian. Iran will use this issue as leverage in the negotiations and at the same time further advance its nuclear program in contradiction to the JCPOA until an agreement is reached in Vienna. Tehran Times tells of how Iran will be responding to the Natanz sabotage. "We will avenge sabotage in Natanz in the aggressor's land," says government. Speaking at his weekly press briefing, Ali Rabi condemned the terrorist attack at the Natanz nuclear site and stressed that action against the Natanz nuclear site shows the defeat of the enemies of Iran's industrial and political progresses. Noting that Iran reserves the right to take action against the perpetrators of the attack, he said, Iran, while condemning this move, urges the international community to respond to this nuclear terrorism. To thwart this goal, the Iranian government will continue to seriously pursue the development of nuclear technology and work to lift sanctions. Rabi, the government spokesman, said, "This sabotage action is intended to prevent the country's development on the one hand and successful negotiations to lift the cruel sanctions on the other." The government spokesman stressed that Iran will retaliate at the appropriate time and with proportionate intensity, but we will not allow the enemies to achieve their political goals. One question remained unanswered. How was the terror attack conducted? Israel would have us believe it was a cyber attack. Here's what Reuters says. Iran identifies suspects behind blast at Natanz nuclear site. Iran on Saturday, April the 17th, named a man it once arrested in connection with a recent explosion and power outage at its main Natanz nuclear plant, as talks got underway in Vienna to try to save Tehran's 2015 nuclear deal with world powers. Reza Karimi, the perpetrator of this sabotage, has been identified by Iran's intelligence ministry, State TV said. It said the suspect had fled Iran before April the 11th blast that the Islamic Republic has blamed on arch foe Israel. The television showed what it said was a photograph of the suspected perpetrator on a red card that had Interpol wanted written on it. The card listed his age as 43. Necessary steps are underway for his arrest and return to the country through legal channels, the report added. And that would be it for the news segment. Back to our narration. Cyber attack or infiltration and physical harm. Perhaps cyber attack by infiltration. Natanz was targeted also in July. An explosion ripped apart an advanced centrifuge assembly plant at the site. Hence, Iran said it would rebuild the site deep inside a nearby mountain. That's yet another instance to suspect Israel for, in addition to a string of incidents including assassinations stretched over the past decade. Looking at Israel's terror attack on Natanz, how do you see the Vienna talks ending?
The Vienna talks over the past week following the Natanz incident have seen many ups and downs. The United States and Europe's positions toward the developments have been something of a double standard. Attacking a country's nuclear facilities is unacceptable anywhere in the world. If this trend continues, it could pose a threat to regional and global security. The world's nuclear nations have signed agreements and memoranda in this regard and have established a red line for the security of nuclear facilities around the world, because they are well aware that if the nuclear security of the facilities is threatened, it will not be limited to that country or region.
Not only was the act not condemned by European parties to the deal, they further boycotted Iran at the same time. Iranian Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi quoted himself in telling the European Union, "We told them that even your human rights sanctions that you imposed 2 days ago we consider as JCPOA-related sanctions, because right in the middle of negotiations you decided to impose sanctions, and that is certainly meant to undermine the current negotiations and to undermine the JCPOA altogether." Natanz found itself first targeted by a major cyber attack in the late 2000s, which is why the recent incident was readily suspected also to be a cyber